Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Monday, October 6, 2014, episode 10.18, the Week 5 Recap Show, also known as the Rafe Alright, You Got Some Splendin' to Do. Alright, we'll get to Rafe's pick later on. Jed York calls Harbaugh's report untrue. The Lions cut their kicker again. Geno Smith and other New York Jet players missed team meetings before the Chargers game.
What?
Man, I can't believe that. The 49er fans wait just two games to christen their stadium with fights outside. Holmgren visits the Raiders and doesn't rule out coaching them. Plus, we have a good old boy in Miami. Let's get it started as there's lots to talk about. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. All right, wherever you are, whatever country you're in, however you're listening to the show, thanks for being a part of it. I appreciate you listening every week. Thanks a lot. This is an early edition of NFL Rants and Raves as the third quarter of Monday Night Football is still going on. The Seattle Seahawks currently have a 17-10 lead, and a game that they had pretty much in hand, all of a sudden, it's a football game again. Let's see what the Redskins do that. Hope that's the last game we'll talk about. So let's just get going. We'll start in Oakland, where the Oakland Raiders have said that Mike Holmgren, previously of the Green Bay Packers and then the Seattle Seahawks, visited the Oakland Raiders. He visited last week as a consultant, shall we say. He was consulting the team, and trust me, the Oakland Raiders need lots of consulting. But he is a good friend of Reggie McKenzie. McKenzie, you know, serves as the GM there in Oakland. So there's a lot of unconfirmed reports that possibly he's getting offered a head coaching gig. That's probably not going to happen till later on, but Mike Holmgren now has been attached to the Oakland Raiders. Let's see how that plays out. Holmgren, you know what? I think Holmgren can do some good if he can also control some of the player personnel moves along with McKenzie and work together. They worked pretty good together in Green Bay, so why not bring that kind of philosophy out to Oakland? First things first, I'll tell Holmgren or whoever decides to coach the Oakland Raiders, get yourselves a quarterback first. Once you do that, then we can talk about it. Next, the San Francisco 49ers and head coach Harbaugh. That would be John, not Jim. Harbaugh, there's been reports all throughout the weekend about Harbaugh kind of wearing out his welcome there in San Francisco, grading on a lot of players and front office personnel, not working well with Trent Baalke, the general manager there. And basically, Jed York has had enough. York says it's categorically not true. I mean, Jim's our coach. I said it clearly yesterday. York saying in terms of that sustainability, every coach will move on at some point. And I don't think Jim is at that point. Well, there you go. He doesn't think that he's at a point where he may want to go. The thing is, if the San Francisco 49ers don't win a Super Bowl this year, and I'm not sure they're going to be in the running for a Super Bowl win. Of course, they have kind of like turned a corner. They've won a few games in a row now. But short of the San Francisco 49ers winning a Super Bowl, I don't think Harbaugh sticks around. There are reports that the University of Michigan, where Harbaugh played college football, will probably come knocking. And maybe if Harbaugh really, really wants out of San Francisco, he figures out a way where he can go and he'll accept the challenge of turning Michigan's football program around, because Michigan's football program needs some serious, serious help. Brady Hoke is not cutting it there as the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines. So I would suspect that is a job that would be enticing enough to lure Harbaugh back to the college ranks. But if he does leave San Francisco, I can name six NFL teams that would shower him with money for him to come coach their football team. Because you got to remember, Harbaugh has won wherever he's gone, whether it be San Diego, Stanford, and, you know, now San Francisco. He wins. He gets there. He changes the culture of the football team, and he wins immediately. I think he's won something crazy like 75% of his football games. That's pretty impressive. So we'll see what happens with the future of Harbaugh. But if the owner is saying, I want him here, then there's not much anyone else can say. If the owner says, you're staying, you're staying. However, Harbaugh may not want to stay if he gets a chance to go. And he it might be just big enough of a challenge for him to go back and take the Michigan head coaching job, if there is a vacancy, which I'm sure there will be. Let's get to the Detroit Lions, where they have kicker problems. Say it with me, folks. One, two, three, kickers. Oh, my goodness, that's right, kickers. The Lions started out the season this year with a rookie kicker, Freeze, and he wasn't getting the job done. He couldn't cut it, so they let him go. And they brought in Alex Henry. Henry, of the Philadelphia Eagles previously, was brought in to take the job. Unfortunately, Henry was 1 of 5 in his two games since becoming the Detroit Lions field goal kicker. And he was let go by Philadelphia. And overall this season, he was 1 of 9. Dude just doesn't have it anymore. He missed not one, not two, but 3 field goals. And that pretty much cost the Detroit Lions the game against the Buffalo Bills. We'll get to that one in a little bit. But missing 4 field goals in 2 weeks. Yeah, sorry, Alex. That's not going to keep you around. He got the axe. And the Detroit Lions is like, dude, come on. Get a kicker who is worthy. Now, fortunately for Detroit, the Denver Broncos just got rid of kicker Matt Prater. He's available. Remember, he was serving a 4-game suspension, and he was eligible to come back this week, as he's now served his 4-game suspension with Denver. But right before the game, Denver cut him. He's available to come back. So maybe the Detroit Lions will give him a call and say, hey, come kick for us, because you know what? We know you can make 45- and 50-yard field goals. You can make them in Denver. You can sure make them here in the Dome in Detroit. We'll move on, where an interesting story has come out of this weekend's game between the New York Jets and the San Diego Chargers. Geno. That's right, Geno Smith, quarterback of the New York Jets. Well, it comes out that he missed part of his team meeting, shall we say. He and a couple of players, they were at the movies. And because they were in San Diego, and this was Saturday before the game, they were in San Diego, he lost track of time, or he counted wrong. Apparently, he was still on East Coast time, not West Coast time. And he mistakenly forgot about the meeting and whatever time it was. And he was at the movies, and he showed up. He missed the meeting entirely. He showed up like 10 minutes after the meeting was done. Yeah, that's not good, especially when you come out and you are just awful. He was 4 of 12 for 27 yards with an interception and a passer rating of a putrid 7.6. That doesn't look good. You cannot miss meetings when you perform that poorly. I mean, you can't miss meetings, period. You should never miss meetings, especially a quarterback team meeting. Should never be missed. But when you only throw for 4 completions for 27 yards, you throw a pick, and your passer rating is 7.6, you have got no reason to miss a meeting. Sorry, Geno Smith. Now, Geno got benched at halftime in favor of Michael Vick. I've been saying Michael Vick should be the starter all along. I think that's going to That's going to change. Rex has said that Geno's still the starting quarterback, but you know what? It's time, man. Sit this guy down. Let's see if you can salvage your season and win a few games. Hopefully Rex Ryan figures this out sooner rather than later, especially if this guy can't tell time. If you can't tell time, even if his clock was on East Coast time, and you can't just subtract 3 hours from whatever time it says on your watch, you probably shouldn't be starting in the National Football League. That's just my opinion. But that's just my opinion. That's neither here nor there. Oh, those San Francisco 49er fans, they just don't get it, do they? Let's talk about them. Oh, gosh. So this just in, two San Francisco 49er fans have been arrested while two others were injured in a fight at Levi Stadium. Apparently, Santa Clarita police told ABC 7 that two male victims were taken to the hospital and one of them has severe head injuries. Two men were arrested for felony assault. There's video of the fight. If you have not seen it, it's available out there. Basically, it's in the stadium. This two dudes, I mean, it's in the bathroom, and it's not like it's 49er fans beating up on who were the Niners playing this? They were playing Kansas City. So it's not like 49er fans beating up Kansas City Chiefs fans. They're 49er fans going at 49er fans. All right? They're all wearing 49er jerseys, and these guys straight beat down a dude in the bathroom. The video is bad. I'm seriously, if you go to YouTube and just Google 49ers versus Chiefs fight in bathroom, this thing will come up. And this one guy wearing a Frank Gore jersey just cold clocks this other dude out of nowhere, just starts throwing haymakers. And this happened in the bathroom of the new stadium. It wasn't even outside. Leave it to 49er fans to just not even be able to get through one season in their brand new stadium before brawling out with other fans. I don't know what happened. I don't know why the altercation happened, but it's pretty crazy that, you know, you're in a stadium, you go to watch a football game, and your team is winning, mind you, and all you could think about is, I'm in the bathroom, and I'm so stinking drunk that I don't like how you're looking at me. I don't care that you're wearing a Colin Kaepernick jersey, I'm going to smack you in the face. And beat him so badly that he has to go to the hospital with severe head trauma. Not cool. Not good. San Francisco, you have to do better. You have to expect better of your football fans. And I hope the 49ers take this seriously and really put these guys away. Just put them away for good. That's all I can say about that. Clearly, I am disappointed with the whole thing there that's going on in San Francisco. Just not a good thing at all. All right, we'll get to Miami, where the Miami Dolphins have another good old boy.
Just a good old boy. Never meaning no harm.
You know they never mean harm.
Beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the law since the day he was born.
Defensive lineman Derek Shelby of the Miami Dolphins was booked for trespassing and resisting arrest. The Dolphins were on a bye this week. You know, they just came back from playing overseas in London. They won the game. But he was accused for touching females without their permission at a nightclub. And when the police officer asked him to leave, Shelby took a threatening stance, and police actually had to taser him 3 times just to get him under control. Shelby's lawyer, of course, is saying that police used excessive force and caused bruises to his client's face. But the thing is, if you're touching females, I think we've talked about this on the show before. If she doesn't want you to touch her, don't touch her. It's that simple. My goodness, you're an adult for crying out loud. Plus, you're a professional football player. I am sure there are hundreds of women out there who would let you touch them. Why are you touching the ones that you don't want to be touched by you? What kind of mentality do you have in your just being that says, I can get away with this? Nonsense. Now, fortunately, the Miami Dolphins has come out and immediately suspended him indefinitely for conduct detrimental to the team. Dolphins coach Dolphins coach Joe Philbin, it just gets away from me sometimes, released a statement and said, we were disappointed to learn about Derek's arrest. Everyone in this organization is held to high standards of conduct and professionalism. Based on my conversations with Derek and the information we have thus far, Derek will be placed on indefinite club suspension. When we have completed all of the necessary diligence, we will make a final determination on his discipline. So good on the Miami Dolphins for making a decision pretty quickly, suspending him indefinitely. Let's go find out exactly what happened there. If it's true, Derek Shelby, you are
boob of the day.
That's exactly where you are for just getting in trouble at this time when the league is getting scrutinized and is under a microscope, and every player in the league is just being watched like hawks. And then especially for doing what it is you're doing, just not good. Just garbage. Absolute garbage. Good that the Miami Dolphins decided to suspend this guy very quickly. We're going to move on now, and I am going to be looking at this week's Week 5 games where our buddy Rafe Elwright, the Down Under Thunder, as he called himself, has got some splaining to do. It's not looking very good for the fans this week as Rafe got caught with some rather questionable calls, made the challenge game Arizona at Denver. Talk about that one in a minute. But first, let's get to El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana. We'll start in Denver, where the Denver Broncos were coming off their bye week and hosting the undefeated Arizona Cardinals, who they too were coming off their bye week. And interestingly enough, the fan participant this week, Rafe Elwright, as he called himself, the Town Under Thunder, had the picks for the fans this week. He was representing the fans, and he decided to make this the challenge game because it was I had won two in a row and now won three in a row. So therefore, I can say this.
I am the smartest man alive!
I am for the third consecutive week. And it's a week where, you know, it's been the fans who are picking the challenge game because the week after I win, the fans get to pick. And he decided that he was taking the Arizona Cardinals. He was confident that the Arizona Cardinals would beat the Denver Broncos. They would stop them defensively, that Peyton Manning wasn't going to be able to dissect them as he did. And he had some valid points. He looked at some statistics and some numbers, and that was good. But you just don't go against Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. You just don't go against Peyton Manning, period, when he comes off a bye week. When that guy's got 2 weeks to study, 2 weeks to come up with a plan, he will shred you. And he and Demaryius Thomas picked apart the Arizona Cardinals. It wasn't even close. He said Arizona wins by 9. If Carson Palmer was the quarterback, would win comfortably by 3. If Drew Stanton was the quarterback, well, Drew got knocked out of the game. Carson Palmer never made an appearance, and they had to rely on Bumblebee tuna number 2. Even so, it didn't matter if Carson Palmer was there or Drew Stanton was there. They weren't beating Denver, I'm sorry. Denver at home was phenomenal. They looked great. Peyton looks fantastic. 500 touchdown passes. He threw 503 through 4 touchdowns on the day. Becoming only the second quarterback in the history of the league to throw for 500 touchdown passes. The other is Brett Favre, who has 508 and will be passed here by Peyton Manning in the next two games.
Peyton Manning, here's a stat, a crazy stat that I came up with that I saw on, it was on Twitter, or someone tweeted it to me, or not to me directly, but tweeted it on my timeline. It was one of the ESPN guys. Here is the craziness. Since he came into the league, Peyton Manning, I think it was 98, has thrown 503 touchdowns. Okay? 503 touchdowns since 98. The New York Jets, since 1987, all their quarterbacks combined have only thrown 499 touchdown passes. Let that sink in. Let that sink in just a minute. Just hear me out. Peyton Manning alone, 503 touchdown passes since 1998. All of the New York Jet quarterbacks combined since 1989, a whole 10 years prior to Peyton Manning's arrival, have only thrown 499 touchdown passes. Yeah. Yeah. Let that, it's sinking in now, isn't it? You're going, you're sitting there and you're saying, Steven!
What?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Peyton Manning is phenomenal. And since he's going to finish this season and the way he looks, probably come back and play another season, he might throw close to 600 touchdown passes before he retires and leave this game. Impressive. Final score there, Denver 41, Arizona 20. Yeah, it wasn't even close. I used actually Denver as one of my picks in the Survivor pool. And, boy, that turned out to be very, very nice. Let's head to Games of the Week. All right, we'll start with the first game of the Week. It was Thursday Night Football, the Green Bay Packers hosting the Minnesota Vikings, a divisional game. And I don't know what is going on Thursday Night Football, but it is just blowout city. Another dog, I think, since the opening game where Seattle beat Green Bay up in Seattle, the winner has won by 20 or more points in every Thursday night game so far. This was no exception. Green Bay came out firing on all cylinders. They walloped the Minnesota Vikings 42-10. Rafe had Minnesota. I'm not sure why. He said that he was disappointed with the Packers and that he had no faith in them, and he was looking for the Vikings in a close upset. Maybe his decision was based that Eddie Lacy was killing him in fantasy football, but you know what? Lacy turned it up, and he scored, I think, 24 fantasy points. So, Rafe, that's some interesting reasoning you had there, but it was not close. Aaron Rodgers looked fantastic. When Rodgers balls out like he does, it's really and you know what? I say that he balls out, but he didn't really have to do much. I think he only threw for 156 yards, but he had three touchdown passes. When you complete 12 out of 17, you only complete 12 passes, and a quarter of them are for touchdowns, you're doing something right. So he had three touchdown passes. Eddie Lacy scored another two on the ground, rushing for 105 yards. It wasn't pretty for the Minnesota Vikings. They never got going. Christian Ponder, man, talk about a guy who just fell apart quickly for Ponder. The Vikings are desperately in need of Teddy Bridgewater to come back, and that's all they've got. They really – their season – with the whole Adrian Peterson fiasco and he's not eligible to play, suspended indefinitely, still waiting for his trial date down there in Texas, they've got nothing. They've turned to Asada, who's okay. He had 72 yards on 15 carries for a 4.8 average. It's not bad at all, but when you're down by 30 points early, you can't really keep running the football. They asked Christian Ponder to throw 44 pass attempts. He only completed half of them, 22 of 44 for 222 yards. He threw no touchdown passes and had two INTs, one of them which was returned to the house. It was just not a good game. They got beat in every phase of the game. Mike Zimmer right now, as much as I like this guy, the head coach of the Vikings, He's got to get a handle of this team because it certainly looks like it may be going south pretty quickly. All right, the next game of the week, the Chicago Bears travel to Carolina to face the Carolina Panthers. Another game that we differed upon, Rafe had Chicago and I had Carolina. I'll just go ahead and say this now. We wound up differing on five games, and he missed all five. So it was a bad week for the fans. Not taking any shots at you, Rafe, just telling the truth there. That's exactly what happened. We differed five, and I got the five correct. Going to be tough for the fans to catch up now. But anyways, we'll see how it goes. 42. The final here was 31-24. Chicago looked like they were doing pretty good. They were in business. Things were looking kind of nice. They actually had a lead there. But Carolina never gave up. And Jay Cutler reared his ugly head. He threw two interceptions, both not in a timely manner. He actually lost the fumble as well. Three turnovers, and then Forte actually lost the fumble as well. So four total turnovers and only one INT for the Carolina Panthers. I think maybe Kelvin Benjamin might have fumbled as well in the game. So still plus two for Carolina in the turnover department. They improved to 3-2 while Chicago drops to 2-3. I just, you know, I don't like Chicago on the road. There's something about when they go on the road, they were able to pull out that victory in San Francisco in week two, but they're just not the same team. And in the second half, they were a shell of themselves. They only mustered a field goal, a 45-yarder at that, so it's pretty long, in the third quarter. In the fourth quarter, the offense could just not get going. And even though Matt Forte had 105 yards receiving on 12 catches and a touchdown, and he had another 61 yards on the ground, it just wasn't enough. Carolina gets the win 31-24, and another loss there for the fans. We'll move on to the third game of the week as the Houston Texans travel to Dallas to face the Dallas Cowboys in the Battle of Texas. Now, this game went to overtime. I, of course, had the Dallas Cowboys. Rafe had Houston. Now, in this game, it was Cowboys, really. I mean, the Cowboys dominated the majority of the game. The first half was pretty quiet. The second half was where all the fireworks happened. But the Cowboys had a 17-7 lead late in the game. They were winning by 10 points. Houston managed a field goal with 2:27 left to make it a 7-point game, 17-10. And here's where there's a little bit of disappointment on the Dallas Cowboys on the offensive side of the ball. You think that they are just going to run and run and run and pound it and maybe have Romo throw a little pass to get a first down and seal the game, right? It's going to be over. They won't have to call their defense to get back on the field. They just could not do that. They had to punt. They went 3-and-out, only spent 17 seconds off the clock, punted the ball away to Houston as they wisely used their timeouts. Then Houston, on four plays, marched 45 yards down the field. They got great field position after the punt and scored a touchdown. Arian Foster, second of the day, to tie the score at 17. But they left about 45 seconds on the clock, and Tony Romo, much to his credit, with the Cowboys still having three timeouts, got the team into decent field goal range. I think they attempted a 53-yarder, a 53-yard field goal attempt by Dan Bailey. And Bailey had been money, but he missed the 53-yarder inside of 50 yards. A 50-yarder or less, I think he's something like 35 for 35. And he had made the last 30 field goals in a row. So very impressive by Dan Bailey. However, he missed that one, and the game went to overtime. Now, in the past, the Dallas Cowboys lose this football game. In the last couple of years, a tight game like this, where they had a chance to win it and they missed the field goal, all the wheels just fall off, and they do some dumb things in the overtime and lose the game. Well, not this time around. Houston won the toss. They actually got a pretty good-looking drive. Got it around midfield, but they were forced to punt after the Cowboys defense held off and got off the field on third down. And in comes Tony Romo. They move the ball pretty well, but on third down near their own 40-yard line, Romo is getting blitzed, and he throws up a ball. I, to be quite honest, thought he was throwing it away. It looked like it was going out of bounds, and out of nowhere, Dez freaking Bryant goes up to make this ridiculous catch. I mean, the catch was sick, mostly because the defender was draped all over him. How there was no flag on that, I still don't know. But he comes down with the ball, and if you go back and you watch the play either on replay or NFL.com and you check out, there's a coach on the sideline for the Houston Texans. And Dez catches that ball with the Houston Texan defender draped all over him right in front of this coach. And this coach turns around and has this look of disbelief on his face like, are you freaking kidding me? Did he really just catch that? Yes, he did. It was pretty amazing. And, Russell Wilson with a big, huge pass to Percy Harvin for a touchdown. But there's a flag on the play. Now, hold on 1 second, because Percy Harvin, if you're not watching Monday Night Football, had two touchdowns in this game. Both had been negated by a penalty. And now he catches what is his third touchdown of the game. And there's a flag on the field, and it is against Seattle. Unreal. This guy has had three touchdowns taken back. It's Monday Night Football again, Seattle and Washington. That was a beautiful pass, but there's a personal foul on Seattle's James Carpenter, and Percy Harvin is walking back to the huddle, shaking his head like, what in the world is going on? Three touchdowns taken away from Percy Harvin. Unreal. Sorry about that. But anyways, Dez Bryant catches the football. After a couple runs on third down, the Cowboys decide, you know what, let's just go out there and kick the field goal. Dan Bailey comes out to kick a 49-yarder, and this time he is true. Cowboys win 20-17 in overtime. Good stuff. The Cowboys are 4-1 for the first time in like 6 years, so pretty good for them, and it's going to be interesting to see how Houston bounces back from that game. Final game of the week, the San Francisco 49ers hosting Kansas City Chiefs. I already talked a little bit about this game and how there were fisticuffs in the bathroom there, but San Francisco was hosting their old quarterback, Alex Smith, and Alex Smith came and boom, got knocked around a little bit. His interception at the end of the game there is kind of sealed the deal for San Francisco. San Francisco utilized their kicker. You know what? They should probably lend him to Detroit because they actually had a guy who could make field goals, for crying out loud. The final in that one was San Francisco 22, Kansas City 17. Kansas City actually had a lead there for a little bit. But the San Francisco 49ers utilized field goals by five field goals attempt by their kicker. I don't even know his name. Dawson, I believe. Phil Dawson was 5 for 5 in field goals. He also had an extra point, 16 points scored in that game. A couple of those field goals were pretty long. But he nailed them, especially three, one in the third quarter and two in the fourth quarters. Made two of them over 50 yards, a 55-yarder in the second quarter and a 52-yarder in the third. And that was all San Francisco needed. They didn't need to get in the end zone much. Relied on the foot of Dawson. And late in the game, it was 22-17. San Francisco, Kansas City had the ball. They had a chance to go in and possibly, you know, score a touchdown at the end of the game. But Alex Smith forced a ball into Travis Kelce, his great tight end, who's been doing very well and played some good football. He dropped – well, he didn't even drop the ball. It was his outstretched hands. They didn't get it, and it was intercepted, and that was all she wrote. That was the end of the game. So it was too bad for Alex Smith. I sort of kind of wished he would have been able to go in there and get the win against his old team, the team that cut him, the team that benched him. but it just wasn't meant to be for him, and he got the loss. San Francisco wins 22-17, and they improved to 3-2 while they dropped the Kansas City Chiefs to 2-3. That's all she wrote for games of the week. At this point, we had differed on four games there with Rafe, and I managed to get wins on all of them. You know, Dallas-Houston went to overtime, so, yeah, that could have gone either way. Carolina needed a touchdown late to win, but they won. The Green Bay game and the Denver games, however, those weren't even close. Green Bay and Denver won running away. Not close there. So let's get on to games of importance. All right. We'll start in Tennessee, where the Tennessee Titans hosted the Cleveland Browns. Now, originally I had made the pick of the Tennessee Titans, but if you're following on Twitter and Facebook, you'll saw the official pick change early in the morning, Sunday morning. I actually had gotten word that Jake Locker was not going to play for Tennessee, so that's why I moved over to the Cleveland Browns. Well, it turns out Locker did play the game, and while he was in the game, looked pretty freaking good. It was like, hey, Locker's looking pretty good, and Tennessee actually built a huge lead. And so I'm thinking to myself, what in the world have I done? Why on earth did I take the Cleveland Browns? And at one point, it was 28-10 at half. And I was just like, I was feeling kind of sick. It was actually 28-3 at one point. And just didn't look good. But I said, you know what? I'm going to keep the faith. There's still plenty of football. Sure enough, they scored another field goal to make it 28-13 before the end of the third quarter. And in the 14th quarter, they got a safety. It was a punt that Tennessee was punting out of their own end zone. The punt was blocked, and the block went out of the back of the end zone for a two-point safety. Then two touchdown passes by Brian Hoyer helped the Cleveland Browns to their first road win in more than a year. Not only that, this comeback was the biggest comeback by a road team in the history of the NFL. That was pretty impressive. Good for the Cleveland Browns. 29-28. I am very happy that I made the change there to the Cleveland Browns. That was good stuff. Got to give it up to Brian Hoyer and the Cleveland Browns. I've said all along, this is a team that is not going to give up. If you look at the four games that the Cleveland Browns have played, okay, and the Cleveland Browns are now sitting at, I believe, after this win, they're sitting at 500 at 2-2. They've played four games. All the four games combined, the differential in the four games is 8 points. They that's right. 8 points is the differential in the four games that they've played so far. Week one, remember, they lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers. This was a game where they were getting blown out, mind you, 27-3. They came back to tie the game 27-27, and then they wound up losing on a late field goal by Pittsburgh, 30-27. That's 3 points. They then went on to beat New Orleans the following week at home. They beat New Orleans 26-24. By 2 points. That's 5. The week after that, they played Baltimore, and Baltimore was winning big, but Cleveland came back, hung right in there, and took it to the game late. They lost by 2 points, 23-21 there, for 7 points. And then this week's one-point win makes it 8 points. 8 points separate their four games, and they're 2-2. I didn't believe they would be 2-2 at this point. I thought by this point they would be sitting at 0-4 and Johnny Manziel would be their quarterback. I've been wrong about that. But they've got to learn to not fall down so bad. I mean, Cleveland Browns have had to come back in almost every game. They came back in both their losses. They actually had a chance to win, but the defense just couldn't get off the field. and Baltimore and Pittsburgh kicked field goals late to get wins. And then, you know, against New Orleans and Tennessee, they're losing, and they come back to win those games. So it's very, very interesting how the Cleveland Browns are playing football right now. I think that's not a good way to play football. You can't be coming back every week. But this week, next week, they host the Pittsburgh Steelers. Maybe they can avenge that week one opening loss and see how that goes. But both Rafe and I had the Cleveland Browns, and we'll keep it there. Next, the New York Giants hosted the Atlanta Falcons, and this turns out to be my first loss. Actually, Rafe's first loss as well, but my first loss. So far, I had been right on the money. The Atlanta Falcons did have a 20-10 lead at one point, and it looked like, hey, that was a pretty good pick, Atlanta on the road. But the New York Giants woke up, and they came back, being down 10 points, to score 20 unanswered points in the second half. They win 30-20. Odell Beckham Jr. on the field for the first time. He caught a touchdown, had four catches for, I think, 44, 45 yards. Pretty good. And the Giants just come back. Might have been, I guess it was the week of the comeback, because there were a lot of comebacks in this game. But Odell Beckham Jr. getting his first touchdown in his first start, it was pretty good. And now the New York Giants, you got to look at them as well as the rest of the NFC East. And it's no longer the laughingstock that everybody anticipated it to be. You have Dallas and Philadelphia sitting at 4-1. The New York Giants are right behind them at 3-2. And that division is playing some pretty good football right now. And, you know, the Washington Redskins, 17-10 late in the third quarter against the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. Now, the Seahawks just pulled a trick punt to get a first down. So and Russell Wilson's running like the wind. But still, playing some good football there in the NFC East for the first time in a long time. Once again, my first loss as Atlanta loses the game. Next game of importance, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers travel to New Orleans to face the New Orleans Saints, who were in desperate, desperate need of a win. If you'll excuse me there, I needed a little bit of water. So warm still here in California, Southern California. Anyways, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers went to New Orleans, and they were looking for an upset, and for a while there, it looked like Tampa Bay was going to get it done. It looked like they were going to upset the New Orleans Saints, and as a matter of fact, they took the New Orleans Saints to overtime. Now, I'm only talking about this because many people took the Saints in their survivor pool, and it looked for a while that they were going to lose. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a big lead, and the Saints just rolled back. They came back. They fought. They hard. Scored 11 points in the fourth quarter to tie the game 31-31 and forced the game to go into overtime, at which point Drew Brees and the offense took care of business, and Kyrie Robinson with a huge 18-yard touchdown run in overtime sealed the deal and gave New Orleans a much-needed victory. Both Rafe and I had New Orleans Saints winning, but for a long time, I really thought I was going to lose this game. It looked like Tampa Bay had complete control after New Orleans started in complete control. I think New Orleans was winning the game 13-0 early in the second quarter. Tampa Bay struck back, came out of nowhere, and took a 24-13 lead. It looked pretty impressive. In the fourth quarter, they took a 31-23 lead, and it took a touchdown and a two-point conversion by the New Orleans Saints to tie the game, force the game to overtime, and that's when they won it. 37-31 was the final. I don't know what's going on in New Orleans. I know their defense is bad. I'm not going to lie. Their defense is abysmal, and at some point, somebody has to step up and say, you know what? I know you're a Ryan, and I know your father, Buddy Ryan, was pretty phenomenal at coaching defenses. And I know your brother, Rex, is pretty phenomenal at coaching defenses. But you know what, Rob? either your defenses are too complex, so complex that your defenders don't understand it, or you're out-thinking, out-coaching the competition, or out-coaching yourself from the competition. It's just, it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be that your defense gets pounded away every week by teams. And right now, the Saints are just giving away far, far too many yards. I'm actually pulling up the stats right now as I'm talking because I think they are dead last on the defensive side of the ball. Total defense, yards given up. They're not. New Orleans actually moved up a little bit thanks to the Jacksonville Jaguars giving up a ton of yards. But New Orleans is still giving up almost 400 yards a game. That's not good. Is that yards per game? Yep, yards per game. Let's see this. The New Orleans Saints are ranked on the defensive side of the ball. They're 25th overall. They're 28th in points allowed, allowing over 28 points per game. 26th in passing yards. You can throw the ball on them. So if they're playing the Saints, get a wide receiver playing the Saints because he's probably going to put up some points. Not good there for New Orleans. They got the win, you know, and they're sitting at 2-3, but not very comfortable with the New Orleans Saints. So if you took them this week in Survivor Pool and you got a win, you knocked it out, good for you. Congratulations. But it's just not looking pretty for the Saints. Next game of importance, the Baltimore Ravens travel to Indianapolis to face the Indianapolis Colts, the place where they were from, the place where they were taken from. And both, this was the final game that Rafe and I differed upon. I had Indianapolis. He had Baltimore. And in the end, the Colts got it done. Interesting, though, because the Indianapolis was winning 20-13, and they had a nice little drive going. They got the ball inside the red zone, and then Bradshaw fumbled the ball. Not good. It was not a very good fumble there because you're trying to run out the clock and win the game. After the fumble, you give the ball back to Joe Flacco and the Ravens offense. You think that they're going to, you know, march down the field and possibly score a game-tying touchdown, but nope. On fourth down, Joe Flacco's pass was just a little too far for Torrey Smith. He dropped it, and that became all she wrote. Indianapolis with a 20-13 win over what is really the hated Baltimore Ravens. Both of these two teams are now sitting at 3-2. Indianapolis is very happy at that because they started 0-2, remember? They lost to Denver on opening night. Then they lost that game to Philadelphia where they were pretty much had the game in control and they kind of let it slip away from them at the end. But they got the win here. They've won three in a row. And even though Andrew Luck wasn't at his best, he only threw one touchdown pass while throwing two interceptions, he still got it done. And there you go. So once again, Rafe, another one. I think he gave the reasons. He said that the Ravens defense would hold Andrew Luck. He still threw for over 300 yards. I think it was like 310, 312, something like that. And he's going to go, he was going to roll with the Ravens because he thought the Ravens were the better team. I didn't think so. And that's why I took Indy, especially Indy at home. They're pretty good football team there. And so, I liked Andrew Luck to get it done. And he did 20-13, the final there. And that, gave me another win over the fans. The final game of importance was Sunday Night Football, where the New England Patriots were looking to bounce back against the Cincinnati Bengals. Here comes my second loss of the week. Both Rafe and I took Cincinnati to take care of the New England Patriots. I mean, come on. The Patriots looked horrible on Monday Night Football. It was a short week. They looked bad. They did not look like offensively they had anybody they could rely upon. Boy, were we wrong. New England came out with a vengeance. You know what? Shame on me. I should have seen this coming because there was no way that Belichick and Brady were going to lose this game after playing so poorly on Monday Night Football the week before. They looked really bad. No way that they let that happen again. Another primetime game. Cincinnati just came out and looked flat out awful. So I'm going to hat tip New England for a good win. 43-17 pounding of Cincinnati. But at some point, the Cincinnati Bengals, Marv Lewis, and Andy Dalton, and A.J. Green, and Giovanni Bernard, and the rest of those Cincinnati Bengals have to find a way to play big in big games. Because this was a big game. They could have gone 4-0 and become the only undefeated team left in the NFL. They dropped the ball on it. They fumbled, turnovers. It was just ugly. Not very good. And Tom Brady was really good. Gronkowski got into the mix. There's another tight end right who had some very big catches. They just looked good in all phases of the game. They were just much more pumped and much more enthused about playing this football game than Cincinnati was, and it started from the very beginning. If New England plays like that every week, I don't see who beats them. I don't see who beats them, but I just don't see it happening week in and week out. Final score there, 43-17, New England, the demise of the evil empire. Well, it was just greatly exaggerated. Let's get to games of interest. All right, running out of time here. We'll start in Detroit, where the Detroit Lions hosted the Buffalo Bills. I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm looking at this game, and the Buffalo Bills won 17-14. And I'm going to say congratulations to the Buffalo Bills. You know, Kyle Orton was making his debut for Buffalo. They were losing in this football game 14-0. 14-0. And it was a touchdown and a pick six. Kyle Orton threw a pick six. It was 14-3 at the half. And you're thinking, well, this is going to be over, right? Well, no. Buffalo scored another field goal in the third quarter to make it 14-6. Then a touchdown and two-point conversion tie the game 14-14. Here's where Alex Henry got fired. He had already missed a couple field goals. Well, Matt Stafford got him in position to kick a potential game-winning field goal. He missed it. And by missing, set up Buffalo with some good field position. Kyle Orton hit Sammy Watkins with a very great catch. His concentration was terrific because he kind of bounced it to himself, bobbled it in the air a little bit, finally hauled it in, put Buffalo in position for Dan Carpenter to hit a 58-yarder, mind you. That was not a short kick. 58-yard field goal. He nailed it with 4 seconds left in the game. Buffalo comes from behind to win. Like I said, they were down 14-0, came back, won 17-14. It's a great win by the Buffalo Bills, but awful, awful play by the Detroit Lions. And I know Calvin Johnson went down early in the game with an ankle injury. But come on, one player goes down and the rest of the game, your offense just looks abysmal. The Detroit Lions are going to have to do something with that, especially if Calvin Johnson can't go because of his injury. The final there, 14-17, that was my third miss of the week as I missed the – I had the Detroit Lions winning at home. So did Rafe. Buffalo gets the win, 17-14, so good for them. Final game of interest, the San Diego Chargers host the New York Jets. We talked about a little bit this game briefly. Geno Smith looked horrible. They brought in Michael Vick. He didn't look all that much better. But I still believe Michael Vick is the better quarterback. There's nobody out there who can make me believe that Geno Smith is a better quarterback than Michael Vick. And I strongly believe if Vick starts the football game, they will do better offensively than if Geno Smith starts. You can't ask Vick to come in, who's been sitting all game long, come in the second half and try to save the day when it's already 28-0. That's not nice. Let me start the game. Let him start the game and see how he goes, how he does it. The final there, 31-0, the first shutout of the year, and it comes at the expense of the New York Football Jets. Let's finish this off with the nap game. All right. The Philadelphia Eagles had the St. Louis Rams at home. Philadelphia pounding. Well, Philadelphia was pounding the St. Louis Rams. How about that? They were pounding the St. Louis Rams. I think at one point it was pretty bad. 34-7, maybe 34-14. It was a 20-point lead. It looked like the game was over. But Austin Davis, after throwing a couple of pretty bad picks, came back, led the Rams to two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, 34-28. Unfortunately, their rally and their comeback fell a little short. They didn't get it done. Eagles win and improve to 4-1, 34-28, dropping the Rams with their third-string quarterback at the helm to 1-3 on the season. Next snap game, the Pittsburgh Steelers going to Jacksonville to face the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I think the Jaguars gave the Pittsburgh Steelers just about everything they could handle. This game was 10-6 at the half, which I couldn't believe that the Jacksonville Jaguars were sticking that close to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has some problems. They really do. They should have blown out this team. They just couldn't do it. You know, interception return for 22 yards by Bruce McCain helped the Pittsburgh Steelers overcome a pretty horrible performance on the offensive side of the ball by Roethlisberger and that whole squad. But they do what everyone expected. Beat the Jags at home 17-9. The Pittsburgh Steelers improved to 3-2 while they dropped the Jaguars to a winless 0-5. It's going to look like a very, very long season for my friends there in Jacksonville and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Final nap game before I head out of here. The Seattle Seahawks playing on Monday Night Football against the Washington Redskins. My friend, this game is far from over, but okay, it's over. The Seattle Seahawks are winning 24-10, up 14 points with about 5 minutes left in the game. Washington has a 3rd-and-3. Kirk Cousins is in shotgun formation. If they pick up this first down, maybe we'll stick around till the end of this game. Otherwise, I'm going to call it a night. Kirk Cousins throws, and it is caught by Roberts. So he seems limping up in the play. So I'm going to pause it here. Catch the rest of this game, and then I will finish the show when Monday Night Football is over. So I am back, and Monday Night Football is now over. Wow, the Washington Redskins gave Seattle a scare there late. Well, maybe not so much a scare, but they did come back and score a touchdown there at the end to make it 24-17. The ensuing kickoff, they decided not to go onside kick. They kicked it into the end zone. But Seattle Seahawks just had a great drive. Russell Wilson was pretty phenomenal. He had 122 yards rushing and a touchdown on the ground, 201 yards through the air passing, and two touchdown passes there. It was pretty phenomenal. The one play there, 24-17, near the end of the game, 2 minutes, 30 seconds left, 3rd-and-4. He scrambles pretty ridiculous, finds Marshawn Lynch, who's kind of come out of the backfield. He dumps it off to him after it looks like he was going to get sacked for maybe a loss of 10, and that was pretty much all she wrote. There was 1, 2, 3, 4 Redskins who had a shot at him, and then Marshawn Lynch was off to the races. He got it in near the red zone. Seattle then kicked the field goal and won the game 27-17. So with that final, my friends, 27-17 final on the night, week 5 is in the books, and I was 12-3 on the week. That is not bad at all. There were only 15 games because Miami and Oakland were on a bye after coming back from London. Only missed 3 games. Missed Atlanta against the Giants. They had a shot at the game. They were actually winning 20-10 at one point. Missed Detroit. They were winning 14-0. And then Alex Henry, whom they cut, and we talked about that earlier in the show, missed 3 field goals. Now, mind you, you know, I know, Greg, I know you're listening, buddy, and I know you were very stoked about this win, and you were raving about your defense, but Calvin Johnson goes out on the first play of the game with an ankle injury. He doesn't play. Reggie Bush gets hurt. Faria gets hurt. They didn't have Joik Bell. That offense was not the Detroit Lion offense that had been playing football this year. So it was a complete shell of himself. I think the only skills player that was available for them was Golden Tate, who really was anyone of significance. But they lost. That was my second loss. And my third loss was one that I was just never really close, and I should have seen it coming, the Cincinnati Bengals losing to the New England Patriots. So the final there, the fans and Rafe, the Thunder Down Under, will go, and he is going to be 7-8, so a losing record for the fans this week. I will be 12-3, which means I will jump now and be 6 games ahead of the fans and take a 3-2 lead in the challenge game. So if you want to go up against me and be one of the fans to go up against me, make sure that you get your picks into the website, www.nflrnr.com/pick'em, or just go to nflrnr.com, and on the right-hand side, you'll see the weekly pick'em button. Click on that and make your picks. If your picks are in before 9 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, before the Thursday night football game, then your name will go into the randomizer where it picks out a name for me to play against. So if you want to play against me, make sure that your picks are in, because if your picks aren't in, then your name will not get selected. And there you go. That's how the names have been selected. If you have to be playing on the website. Once again, NFLRNR.com. The weekly pick'em button is there on the right-hand side of the page. And if you're not following us on Facebook and Twitter, get on out there. It's getting pretty lonely on Twitter during football games, as I'm tweeting along during some football games. Come out and give us some feedback. Reply back to some of the questions that I've got out there on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you very much for listening. Week 5 is in the books. Week 6 coming up pretty quickly. Also, I'm going to be tweeting out and putting on Facebook link to DraftKings as a 1 week fantasy football. Next Sunday, they're going to have what they call the Millionaire Maker. That's right. You'll be playing for $1 million. Basically, it's a $27 buy-in. You buy in for $27. You draft a team of that consists of a quarterback, two running backs, 3 wide receivers, a tight end, a flex, which could be a running back, tight end, a wide receiver, and a defense. And based on how they do, you could win $1 million if you're first. I think the top 15,000 entries, 15,500 actually, will win cash prizes. I was one of the winners this week. I did not win the $1 million, but I think I won a couple $100. So not bad there. Good way to start for me on DraftKings. I will put out a link. If you sign out with your link, you'll help out the show and help me out as well. So once again, DraftKings, look out for the link to sign up and play in the $2.2 million Millionaire Maker, which takes place next Sunday. Thank you for listening. I'm Stephen Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.